Live event coverage on RadioSt.Pete.com and our tune-in podcast channel from the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club luncheon at the St. Pete Yacht Club. Our luncheon speaker, John Morgan. Let's go to the podium. And here is Tiger Bay President Todd Jennings.
The rules for the Fang and Claw question session are on your tables. Please review prior to the Q&A session. As a reminder, only members and young Tigers may ask questions. You have 45 seconds to frame your question, no exceptions. And the rule we have to reiterate every meeting is no speeches, please. You may only ask a single question, wait for the microphone, and then state your name clearly. Rating the Fang and Claw questions today are several board members in the audience: Vice President Kelly Kirshner, Brian Battaglia, Marilyn Miller, Elise Minkoff, and David Milchin. At this time, I'd like to invite Board Member Betty Morgenstein to the podium to introduce our guest speaker.
Willie Rowoni, John Morgan, the Kentucky-born lawyer who is probably one of the best-known residents in Florida, isn't saying if he'll run for governor in 2018. He says he has plenty of time to decide. Besides, he has other work to do. Morgan had taken on the medical marijuana issue and managed to get it passed by over 70% of the citizens in 2016. However, the legislature had tried to prevent smoking of pot. This has made Morgan mad, and he is suing. If you don't know the Morgan name, you must not never look at television. If you do, you will see his wife, his sons, his grandson, who's darling, and his dog. And all will tell you it's for the people. Morgan and Morgan has over 300 lawyers in 9 states and a big staff. John Morgan has a plain-spoken country boy manner, but don't mistake that for softness. He has been known to use some tough words as he speaks about what he wishes for the state. He is also working on a minimum wage amendment for 2020. But right now, he's with the marijuana suit. And will he run for governor? Maybe he'll tell us today. Let's give us a warm Tiger Bay welcome to John Morgan.
Thank you, Aunt Betty. I shortened my name in college. Let's get first business taken care of before we do anything, so we can really move on to other things. And it goes like this: if you've been injured in an automobile accident, hurt on the job, or get food poisoning here with this chicken dish, I'm your man. It's good to be back. Now this is working. It's good to be back in Charlie Crist country. Charlie Crist, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, I had the honor of being his friend and practiced law with him before he won. And I will tell you this, no matter what your party affiliation is, he's one of the best people, good-hearted people you will ever meet in your life. He is a genuine deal. I'm also nervous to be sitting here in front of Adam Smith. On the way over, I'm reading my Google alerts, and it pops up that Adam Smith has written about this event and described me as a charming rogue. I don't know what a charming rogue is. I ask him, he says it's good. So I was out of the state for most of the summer up to now. I came back almost right before the hurricane got here. And I don't know about you all who watched this hurricane, but it seemed to be a real mess as far as the weather reports went. I don't know if they know anything about the weather or the map. They basically said it's going to hit Tampa, it's going to hit Daytona, it's going to hit Key West. They said it was everything. They had this cone coming up. There was the European model going this way, the American model going that way, the Sports Illustrated model is going up this way. There's like 50 models, and one of them was going to be right. The only thing they didn't have in the cone was Montana, South Dakota. So I've decided that if I'm ever governor, my hurricane update is going to sound something like this. Hurricane update from Florida. We're now certain that there's a hurricane. It's somewhere between a Cat 1 and 5. We are sure it may or may not bring rain to all or some of the areas, totally 0.01 inches up to 10 feet. We also know it will be impacting none or all of Florida, coming ashore on the east, northeast, center, west, northwest, or the Alabama side of the state. Sometime on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and still not ruling out Tuesday. We have also downloaded an app to our phones allowing us to use them as walkie-talkies that may or may not work. In short, we are prepared for all the above, and all will be just fine. So that will be the ongoing hurricane alert, no matter what the storm is, because we know that they don't know what is going to happen or how it's going to happen. We do know that every single station has, like, I now find out, like 8 meteorologists. I mean, they were just keep coming and coming and coming. There's like, you know, the janitor does the sports. But the hurricane came and hit, and we learned a lot about it. We learned what a monopoly looks like if you had power out. We understood what tort reform looked like if you were trapped in a nursing home in Hollywood, Florida. You see, the law in Florida is if you're in a nursing home, all you can get is $250,000 for pain and suffering. So we got to see what tort reform looked like up close and personal. What it looks like is we warehouse people and we put them away, and big corporations make a lot of money, and we can do to them whatever they want. We can even cook them alive. Our dogs, when they go to the kennel, they have cameras on the dogs. And by the way, Emma and Molly say hello. And they refuse to go to the kennel. But if they did go to the kennel, there would be a camera watching their every move. Yet our mothers and our grandmothers and our best friends are warehoused in these nursing homes. And sometimes, like last month, cooked alive. That's tort reform. That's what it looks like in real life. So, as I've been thinking about this whole prospect of running or not running, let me tell you first and foremost for Adam that I am dead serious about doing this. I got to meet with Phil Levine last week. I gave a speech on marijuana to some entrepreneurs down south, and I got to meet with Phil. And I never met with Phil before, and by the way, he's a fantastic guy. He's not announced either. When we got through talking, I got up and I said, Phil, I want to thank you for coming. I'm knocked out by you. I know why you came. I just want you to know I will seriously consider you as lieutenant governor material should that time come to me. He thanked me for that. Here's how I'm looking at this. When I was at University of Florida and when I was in law school, I used to ask girls out on dates. And they always said yes. Now, they didn't say yes because I was tall and good-looking and necessarily. They said yes because I kind of figured they were going to say yes before I asked them out. When I asked my wife to marry me, I kind of figured she was going to say yes before I asked her, and she said yes. So for me, this is kind of like dating. or the prospect of even asking somebody out on a date. A lot of these politicians go around and they talk about a listening tour. I'm going to go listen. I want to listen. Well, that's so much BS. They don't want to listen to anything. They say it because it sounds good and it makes you all feel good that they care about what you say. What I'm doing is I'm on a talking tour. I'm going to tell you everything I think. I may say two or three things a day and that disqualifies me. And that's okay. Unlike every single person running for governor or thinking about running for governor, I'm the only one that has a day job. If they all lose, they got nowhere to go. I got plenty to do. So I will tell you what I think. I will talk to you bluntly. And at the end, I'm going to figure out if you'd say yes if I ask. And so that's part of what I'm doing here today. I want to tell you a story about me. One time I was 10 years old, and I had a bad tooth right up here. And my dad took me to the dentist in Lexington, Kentucky. My life story is one of, there was a lot of hardship, a lot of struggle, but believe it or not, I had a wonderful childhood. I never went without food, but I went a lot of nights worried. My dad took me to the dentist to fix my tooth. I heard the dentist outside talking to my dad, and I heard the dentist say to my dad, we can do one of two things. We can do a root canal, or we can pull his tooth. I knew that was not good. My dad said, how much is it? Pull it for $5, we can do the root canal for $50. And my dad said, pull it. And I said to myself, boy, am I screwed. And he pulled the tooth. And I drove home, and they had gauze in it, and I pulled the gauze out, and I put my tongue through it. And I thought, my God, I think this guy pulled three instead of one. It was so big. And I walked in, I saw my four brothers and sisters, and I looked at them, and they looked at me like, you know, we're sad for you. Because now we knew what we were in. But that was kind of a good day for me, because I understood what I was up against. I understood what desperation tasted like and what forever was. And that day, believe it or not, changed my life forever. I got a paper out almost as soon as possible because I said to myself, nobody's ever going to pull the other teeth. And so, as I think about this, the thing I think about most is people that were like me. The single greatest problem that I think is facing Florida and America is that people aren't paid enough for an honest day's work. People go to work, they do all the right things, they do all the right time, they put on the uniform, and they make $8 an hour, and they go home, but they stop off at a food bank before they get there. The Bernie Sanders voters were not much different than Donald Trump voters. They were desperate people who knew that they were being treated unfairly, doing everything right and everything wrong happening. When I look at the problems facing Florida, I see the minimum wage is first, second, and third. We've tried everything else. These people are out there and they're desperate. Their desperation is palpable because they got family. They got wives and husbands and sons and daughters to take care of. And the harder they work, the worse it gets. It's like they're in quicksand. I said this at Tampa Bay, Tiger Bay. You remember the old Westerns when the rifleman would get caught up in quicksand, be sinking? That's what most of America's like. 77% of America couldn't put $400 together in case of an emergency. Transmission goes out, what happens? I read today coming over in the Wall Street Journal that Target is increasing their minimum wage to $11.15 by 2020. It can be done. And so for me, that's the first thing. They want to blame illegal immigrants and all these illegal immigrants. Don't let that be a smokescreen, folks. That's total BS. If we want to get rid of the illegal immigrants in America that take our jobs, jobs that we won't do, you ever picked an apple? You ever picked strawberries? You ever been on a roof? You ever been a window washer? For $8 an hour, I don't think so. Those people who do that job do it for almost slave labor. If we wanted to get rid of all the illegal immigrants, we could do it today. We could make it a third-degree felony, and we could charge the person $100,000 for doing it, and they'll be gone tomorrow. We don't do that because we don't want to do that, because we like slave labor. And so for me, when I think about what I would do, and that's why I've moved to pass this constitutional amendment, is a living wage for a fair day's work. The second thing I would talk to you all about is this. The right for felons to have their rights restored. Look, we're a country that believes in redemption and salvation and forgiveness. That's what we talk about in church all the time. And we send all people off to prison. They pay their time. And the nonviolent felons come out. And they're never made whole. I was at a restaurant the other night close to New Smyrna Beach called Bella Valentina. Young guy comes up named Zach. He starts talking to me. He's a roofer. And then he tells me, I said, why don't you start your own company? I can't. Why? I'm a felon. What'd you do? Drug possession. 32 years old. And this is the truth. He starts talking to me and he started crying. He looked like my boys. He could have been my boy. I told that guy, I said, give me your phone number, or you call me, and by God, we'll start a roofing company, and we'll make it the biggest one here in Central Florida. That's not right. That's not fair. Criminal justice reform is desperately needed in this state. The Koch brothers and I disagree on a lot of things, but my hats are off to these people because it's wrong. For-profit prisons are wrong. When you build a for-profit prison, you've got to force people in there so they can make money. In America, we put 18 times more people in prison than the next closest country per capita, and that's China. For-profit prisons are made to make a few people rich. Years ago, I was partners with Johnny Cochran and a bunch of businesses. And we used to talk about the disproportion of minorities that go to prison. And Johnny used to tell me, John, the color of justice in America is green. And it's true. I don't believe drug addiction is a crime. I don't believe drug addicts should be locked up. I don't believe alcoholics should be locked up. We warehouse these drug addicts. I'm going to tell you something. If I was the governor of the state of Florida, drug addicts would not be locked up. People who sell drugs will be locked up for a long time. Our public school teachers are our heroes. There's a war on public school teachers. These teachers made America great. It started out in one-room schoolhouses a long time ago, and now it's here, and we're the greatest generation of all time. But somehow we want to have these charter schools so our kids can go to a private school, and now we find the results are those charter schools don't work much at all. The results are terrible. More rich people getting richer off the public dole. What I believe the government should be is to provide the most for the most, not the most for the ones with the most. I believe there should be a separation of church and state because there's a whole bunch of different religions. And we can't be favoring one over the other. But I don't believe you can separate your church from your core beliefs. I don't believe as a public office holder you can separate who you are from your beliefs. There used to be a little thing you put on your wrist called, you know, what would Jesus do? Remember WWJD? What would Moses do? What would Buddha do? What would Muhammad do? What would God do? You can't separate that. And if I was the governor, I would ask that question to myself every single day. What would God do? And I know what he would do. He would be merciful and just. He would protect. We learn things in church and we go out in the government and do everything the opposite. We learn in church, feed the poor, shelter the hungry, feed the hungry, shelter the needy, and we go out and change those rules. It's all lip service. I believe that the God that I pray to, the God that I know, lives not up there, but in you, and in you, and in you. I believe when I see somebody's hungry, or begging, or without shelter, I'm not looking at a deadbeat. I'm looking at God. And that's the only way that I can live and love God, to love people and to love God. My childhood had a lot of desperation, but I thank God every day that I got to taste it. And let me tell you something. Later in life, my two brothers became dentists. And they said, John, why don't you let us fix that home? And I decided against it. Because every day, 100 times a day, I get to feel it. And it reminds me of who I am and who I was. And it reminds me of all the people that have helped me along the way. The public school teachers, the mentors, my priest. At my most desperate hour, there has been someone there to reach out and to help me. That's what I believe government is supposed to do. To do the most for the most. And I don't think they do it. And so, as I think about this, that's what I think about. That's why I would do it. In my personal life, in my personal charities, it's the Morgan Hunger Relief Center at Second Harvest in Orlando. When I was hungry, gave me to eat. It's the Harbor House for abused women, the Morgan Safe House. When I needed shelter, someone gave me shelter. I just gave $1 million to this guy, Joel Hunter, who ran Northland Church to build a coalition for the homeless. One thing about the people who are homeless, I can promise you this, they don't want to be there. And I know this when I look at them. I don't look at a dirty old lady or a bum. What I look at is 30 years ago, when that person was a little boy and a little girl, and they played, and they had ice cream, and they went to the park, and they swam. When I look at that person, I see God. And when I look at the problems facing Florida and America, I wonder to myself, where is God, and why don't we use him more? So, I'll go back to my day job. I'll do what I've been doing for 30 some odd years. I'm going to Kentucky on Friday. I've been hired by the Attorney General to sue the manufacturers of opioids, single greatest health issue in our America today. But until I see you again, I will be out there doing what I've always done, fighting for the people. Thank you. By the way, I think that timer like shaves off like 3 or 4 minutes or something. I'm not so sure. I'd like to see that timer up on a wall. It's the fastest 20 I've ever been a part of. Okay. I know who I'm not choosing. Adam Smith, that guy from Tampa Times back to me.
Hello, I'm Nicholas Esposito, the senior from Boca Chica High School. I'm close to my face, sorry about that. First off, I would just like to say how honored I am to meet you. I've read a lot about your exploits, your history, and heard about you for 17 years now.
Well, be careful that exploits word. Let's just talk about
travels. Now, the question I wanted to ask of you was, as the legalization of marijuana comes comes up in a lot of these states. What sort of format are you thinking of introducing it on? On a recreational scale, something like Colorado, where small businesses are defended, and you know local communities are able to set up their businesses, or something along the lines of what Ohio recently did, but was defeated, where it was restricted to about 10 or so major corporations, not really tied with local communities. I was just wondering, like, what would you think?
What I think is this, and this is part of the talking tours, is this may disqualify me with a bunch of you right away. I've been around this issue now for a long time. I have shared emails back and forth with Sheldon Adelson, who poured $5 million something into the first campaign against me. I have watched the opioid epidemic destroy America, kill more people under 50 than anything else. And I have now come to the conclusion that the full legalization of marijuana is going to happen in America someday. There's no doubt about that. We all know that. When they fired Ron Zook up at University of Florida, Jeremy Foley said, we should do today what we know we're going to do tomorrow. My belief, and it's one that's, you know, I think will be controversial, is I believe that the full legalization of marijuana should happen today. I spent a lot of time in Colorado. Everything's working just fine out there. Everything's good. The economy's good. The world didn't end. Real estate prices are up. There's jobs. There's taxes. And so I may be the first person to ever think about running for governor or anything in the country that takes that position. But we know it's going to happen. It should happen. The dangerous drugs for all of you and for all of your family is at the CVS and Walgreens, and it's called fentanyl, and it's called OxyContin, and it's called Percocet and Xanax and everything else. So I don't know why this marijuana works. I don't know why aloe works. I mean, I'm a political scientist, for God's sake. I'm bad at math and science. But I know it works. So that's my position. Yes, sir.
I'm a fellow attorney, state planner. You made a comment in the very beginning about the 250,000 minimum of the nursing homes, and that right away made me think about if you are governor, you will have a conflict of interest. We have a medical emergency here in Florida. The doctors are doing testing that they don't need to do because they need to protect themselves. You now have an unlimited amount of exposure, not 250,000, but unlimited. How will you divorce yourself from the money-making side of law?
Well, listen, that's one of the things that I talk to myself all about when I'm thinking about whether you all want to date me. I'm thinking about, do I want to date you? Because there is, the money side is very complicated, and I'm walking myself through that right now of what I would have to divest, what I couldn't do. Look, I have been way more fortunate than I ever could have thought about when we were getting run out of Kentucky when I was 14 years old. And I really don't take credit for it, because I think 99% of everything that's happened to me has been luck, a right turn, a left turn, being born in America, et cetera, et cetera. But so for me, unlike everybody else, I will have to divorce myself of it. Believe me, the journalists in this room, they will spend every waking moment making sure that I have divorced myself of it. And so when I think about it, because listen, I am the ultimate capitalist. I consider myself a compassionate capitalist. But I am a capitalist through and through. So part of my equation in doing this is what I would have to divest myself of, what I would have to put into trust. I mean, as a planning lawyer, estate planning, you appreciate this. As I got older, I got four kids, and most of my new money I put in my kids' names anyway. So a lot of that's already been taken care of for me and for them. And some of my biggest things have been put in their names. But don't get too worried about the medical malpractice claims. Medical malpractice claims in Florida are like this. There's probably not even 50 lawsuits tried a year in Florida. There's maybe not 10 tried. A lot of people want to talk about the crises, but there is no crises. There's just not that many lawsuits made for medical malpractice in Florida. That's just a hard fact. These judges, by the way, I love every one of you. I'll be happy to contribute to the campaign. Very much. Just let me know where the mailing address is to the campaign office. These judges will tell you that they don't see many medical malpractice claims tried to verdict in their courtrooms.
Hi, Jenny James. If you run for governor, you will be running on a Democratic Party ticket, a party that has been pretty ineffective for a couple of decades now at actually running statewide candidates or winning legislative races. What do you think you would bring to the ticket that could change that?
I think that what happens in both sides is that they run with gimmicks and stunts, and they really never just tell you what I really think. I think there's a problem. I think the reason Hillary Clinton lost the election was because she ran not to lose instead of running to win. She was in my house 2 times. I know them real well. You all never got to know her. She's funny. She's bright. She's clever. America never got to see that. With me, I am a fighter. I am an unvarnished, charming rogue. And what you see is what you get, for better or for worse. And some people say to me, no, if Trump can do it, you can do it. I don't take that as a compliment. All I say is this. I say what I think. I don't think like Trump, but I say what I think. And I think what I would give the Democratic Party is a fighting chance, because I'm a fighter, and that's all I've done my entire life. I fought our way out of poverty. I fought our way out of desperation. I built gigantic companies, and I've won. And so, and I hate to lose. So that's what I think would be the difference between me and a lot of politicians. And by the way, I know them all. And I like them all a lot. Gwen Graham, I call her little sister at Morgan & Morgan. Jack Latvala, you know, I need him in the race. I need somebody heavier than me in this race. I mean, I can't be the fat guy running for office. So I like them all. I like Phil Levine, my lieutenant governor candidate. So, but I'm just a little bit different than them in a lot of respects. Sorry.
Hi, Joanne Latino, recently elected school board member. Thank you so much for giving the positive nod to the public school teachers in our county and across our country. I'm interested in knowing, how do you perceive, if you were governor, preventing the education system of a public school from continuing down the slippery slope, especially from what we've seen in the recent bill 7069 that was delivered by our legislators in Tallahassee?
Well, look, the one thing about me, as opposed to a lot of these other people, is I don't get mad and get angry at the people who disagree with me. Richard Corcoran is one of my good friends, great friends. We sit on the back porch of my house. He drinks Camus wine. Of course, Republicans drink expensive stuff. And, you know, I have my makers, and we talk. I disagree with his whole deal about charter schools. Charter schools is the way that people want to send their kids to a private school and put them in a green shirt and khaki pants. They think that's going to make them smarter. It's not. It's not. Everything that's happened up in Michigan, the results are in for charter schools. It's a disaster. The test results are terrible. You as a teacher, you know what the number one reason people do good in school? They got parents at home that are doing the homework. It was a nightmare for me. Just, you know, after fifth grade, I couldn't do the math. But thank God my wife was Phi Beta Kappa and she could. But we're draining resources to pump into charter schools who are going to do worse. The teachers aren't certified, by the way. They don't have to be certified. They just have to be, you know, be on the payroll. Rich people own the land. Rich people own the buildings. Rich people own the same schools that own the prisons. Education's going down. Public school teachers, to me, are the greatest heroes in America. When I was in the fourth grade, we had to leave Christ the King because we couldn't pay the tuition in Lexington. I got over to Cassidy Elementary, and I tested for reading, and I tested as a sixth grader at fourth grade level. Most humiliating time you could ever imagine. I had to go behind my little brother into reading. Ms. Brewer told me, we're going to fix this. There was a thing called SRA. You all may be old enough to remember SRA, these colors. And by God, with Ms. Brewer's help, by the time I got out of sixth grade, I was reading with everybody else. I've never forgotten that woman. Later in life, I get an article. I had a teacher named Ms. Zirin, Winter Park High School, public school teacher, speech, debate. I get an article in the paper, in the news, a newspaper article into my mail. I'm like, what is a picture of me? Just want to finish. And she says, and there's a little note from my 11th grade teacher. And it was a clipping, and she said, you go, boy. Joan Zirin. If I was the governor of the state of Florida, the Florida school teachers, the public school teachers would never have a friend better before, after, or everything in between. Because what I told you about remembering, I remember. Sir.
Jim Gillespie, you said you're a compassionate capitalist. Wall Street Journal has pointed out that 70% of the people in this country live paycheck to paycheck. They also pointed out that families earning $100,000 generally cannot come up with $1,000 in an emergency. If you were a governor, what would be the first two actions you would take to try to even out in the economic condition of the people and improve? What first two actions would you take, either as a governor alone or in conjunction with the legislature?
The first action I've already taken, and that is I have registered my political committee to raise the minimum wage. And what I would do as governor is I would move that along in the constitutional amendment. I'm not doing it for 2018, because you know why I didn't want to do it for 2018? I didn't want you all to say he's doing it for a stunt. He's doing it as a gimmick. He's doing this because he's running for governor. I want it to be pure. And I'm going to do it no matter what I do, because I believe in political, I call it political philanthropy. I believe if I get that constitutional amendment passed, the problems you're talking about go away for a whole bunch of people. At that hunger center over in Orlando, we feed 250,000 people a month. It's the same people you're talking about. They come there in Winn-Dixie uniforms. They come there in gas station uniforms. So I would pressure hard the legislature to do it, not in the form of a constitutional amendment, to look at companies like Target and Aetna, where they are paying the people right. And the second thing that I would do is I would get inside the criminal justice system to draw on money that people pay to defend themselves from crimes that should not be crimes is crazy. They get tied up with a drug possession, and all of a sudden their economic opportunities forever. That boy I was talking about, Zach the roofer, he should not be in that position. And I believe that the criminal justice system and the restoring of felons' rights is directly tied to economic opportunity. So that'd be one and two. Yep. Oh.
Hi there, my name is Corey Hubbard. I appreciate the compassion that you bring to a lot of the topics you've discussed today, but as a capitalist, you know that jobs are not created out of nowhere. What would you say to the small business owners who would choose, in the event that you mandate a higher cost for their employees? What would you say to, for example, my father, who owns a small business, who would potentially choose to hire less people? So not only would it be the people you're trying to protect not have a job, they wouldn't just be making less, there'd be less in the market. So how could you speak to the negative implications of the minimum wage rather than just a nice, make everybody feel better and have more money?
Okay, well, first of all, I have a lot of small businesses. I own a chain of attractions. I own hotels. I have a lot of people who would fall into that category, and I would be directly affected. I have people in my law firm. We have 375 lawyers, but we have 2,300 people that work in these law firms. What I would say to that is this. Look, we've tried everything else. In answer to Mr. Gillespie, we've tried everything else to pull people up. But what have we tried? We're getting ready to have a tax cut. I just read this tax cut plan that's coming down the barrel. And they're talking about making the Chapter S companies pay 25%. I'm a Chapter S company. The economic benefit to me is staggering. Staggering of what I would make if the proposed tax plan passes. Listen, there's always going to be people that say, hey, we're just talking about, listen, business owners are going to hire as many people as they need. If your father owns an ice cream store and he's got two scoopers and there's enough people coming in that he needs to hire a third scooper, he's going to hire a third scooper even at $13 an hour. The thing you need to worry about, we all need to worry about, are robots and artificial intelligence. You think these fast food places, these pizza places are not looking right now to figure out a way to get rid of those people that drive through window? You think people aren't trying to figure out how to make a perfect pizza every single time? So my answer to your dad is this. Look, you may not need five people. You may have only needed four all the time. And you're going to become more efficient. But my answer to the most, because my platform would be, number one, I am you. I have been there, and I know what you feel like. I know what it's like to have your house on the block. I know what it's like to have power cut off. I know what it's like for your phone not to work. I know what it's like to not know what's going to happen next. So I would say to them is this, to your dad, you may be able to get by with four instead of five. This experiment has worked in places like right now in Seattle, and it's working great. That is always the argument, that less people are going to have a job. I'd rather, and by the way, you know what those people, the government money that pours into these people who are underpaid is paid for by you. And the money that you're going to save, oh, that's why I quit making eye contact over there. All right. Yes, ma'am.
I'm Donna Blazovic from St. Petersburg. You talked about restoring rights to convicted felons who have served their time. And when this is always discussed, they talk about nonviolent felons. Well, even violent felons have served their time and paid their debt to society. So why shouldn't they have all their civil rights restored?
Look, you may be right, but I'm telling you what I believe is politically possible. I don't get, if I got to do everything I want, I mean, it'd be a party. But I don't get to do everything I want. I was with Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia, who is going to run for president, by the way, has a good chance of winning, been a good friend of mine forever. I was with Terry McAuliffe the day and the night at the governor's mansion in Virginia that he restored felons' rights. He was telling me stories about this older man who was so embarrassed that he couldn't vote, that he was crying to Terry. He said, what's the worst thing in your life? He said, my children don't get to see me vote. So Terry did what was politically possible. You know, people believe that the word compromise is a dirty word. The reason I say nonviolent is because that is my compromise. That is my compromise of what I think could happen for the most, to do the most for the most. And that's why it's my position. Look, people, I believe people, this whole issue of guns, the gun issue is never going to be resolved. There needs to be a compromise. The real compromise is going to be simple. Listen, I don't understand guns. I don't understand them at all. If you put me with a rifle, you'd think Elmer Fudd was walking through the, you know, because I'm not a gun guy. But I don't care about guns. The only thing I think say about guns is this. Just don't let crazy people have them. Just real simple. Don't let crazy people have them. I got brothers and brother-in-laws. They got more guns than they can ever. They got guns they never opened up. And so there are issues like that where at some, but there's nobody ever going to compromise. You've got the Second Amendment, which I strongly support. You've got people who want to take everybody's guns. And nobody ever wants to compromise. Compromise has somehow seemed to be a dirty word. But I believe on felons' rights, we can accomplish a lot for like 98% of them, because there's not that many violent felons that have had their, that are out. Last question.
I
asked the last question. Oh, I was going to say, who would you vote for governor? John Mark. Yes, sir. Oh, I should ask the timer. Should I? Can we do two?
If you answer quickly.
I'll answer quickly.
Mine's short. Scott White in St. Petersburg. John, the most important thing is your wife, your sons, and your dogs. What are they advising you about right now?
That may be the hardest sell of all. I'm married to a Republican. My kids are Democrats and Republican, and we have a wonderful life. One of my children lives across from me, the grandson, at the beach. All my beach houses are stacked one by one. They're all there. One time I saw this movie called My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and I was just crying like a baby. I told my wife, if I ever get money, I'm going to have that stuff. And so the hardest thing may be for them and for me is that we love each other and we love being with each other. And we do talk about that quite a bit. So I may have some selling to do to the most important people in my life. Timekeeper.
I'm keeping her time.
Keep her time, yeah.
I talk fast.
My name is Corey Adler. I'm the executive director of the largest poverty reduction program in our state. And one of the hardest people to place is an ex-felon. An ex-offender. So even if we get them out of prison and we end disparity issues, and now they're out of prison, how do we move businesses to actually hire them so they're not living in poverty and receiving government assistance when they really just want to get a job?
It's very hard because people, you know, it's always good for somebody else to do good. It's hard for you to do good. I have done that. I have hired many felons in my businesses. Because I do not believe that I could ever be forgiven unless I forgive myself. And I don't believe I can just talk about it. I got to do it. One of the reasons I gave all this money to Joel Hunter has this mega church called the Northland Church over in Orlando area. He's the most dynamic speaker you'll ever have. He left the church and he started this coalition for the homeless. And I seeded it with $1 million. Part of what he's talking about doing is to build this faith-based network where someone who is homeless, who has, I think, that someone inside of that faith-based network will say, you know what? I will give you a chance. I will give you a start. I will fix your car. I will get you some clothing so you can do that. But until we actually read the teachings from whoever your religious and spiritual advisor are, until we read those and act on those, nothing is ever, ever going to change for the better. Well, thank you all very much for having me.